Hey, this is Joe Crisera, and you're listening to Contractor Stories. Telling these authentic stories.
You better believe, you better believe. I never expected to get the life that I've gotten out of this industry. I mean, I had no idea. I was just a kid, but, you know, that was fortunate enough to take on a plumbing company, and I didn't kill it. I kept it going, and I actually grew it and made it into something. We started this PE thing, and then between the money I was making in my first company and then the money I got, you know, for selling a part of that company, it set me up really well. And I did a lot of things while I was making money to make sure that I set myself up.
Entrepreneurship, got that inspiration. Yeah, now I'm just doing it. Working on these projects, my ideas I'm pursuing. No matter what the problem, the solution, I'm proving it. Let's talk about it and open up the dialogue. Contractors telling their stories about how they got it started and how they keep it going. The passion fuels the mission. Now we blasted in the orbit, we gone. That's where we grow from. Started with the vision, make the pitch and knock it out the park like home runs. We keep it moving, self-belief, no doubt. Pass off the mic to my man's Jim Cloud.
Hold on, everybody, for another fantastic episode of Contractor Stories. Billy Stevens. Billy, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
You have got quite a story. Many of you will know who Billy is. Those of you who don't, you will know pretty soon, because he continues to do great things in the home service world. And he's really working on a big project he has for a few years now that you will definitely want to know about and you may want to implement into your home service business. So, Billy, on this program, we go deep back into the past and learn about the man when he was a boy. Now, before we do that, though, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about what you've been doing for, let's say, the past 10 to 20 years and your success, and then we're going to go back in time to see how you got there. Where do you want to start?
Sure, we can do that. Okay. Do I need a lay on the couch or anything?
No, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. This is therapeutic. We've had some people cry. We've had some people pass out, but I think you're going to do fine.
All right. Yeah. So in 1996, I got in the plumbing HVAC space when my plumber passed away. Mm. I was working for a home builder and he passed away and the wife had to be the owner, of course, the widow. And she was having a really hard time, you know, running the business. She had no idea. She stayed at home. And fortunately, I was able to go over and talk to her and, you know, make a long story short, I ended up with the company. I've got some money from my father-in-law. He loaned me $10,000. I had zero money, had no money. I had nothing. He loaned me 10 grand and she financed about half of it. And then we were able to get the bank to finance the other half. And so back then, back in 96, yeah. So it was hard back then to get money. You really had to go to the bank and you had to have credit with it. So I was fortunate enough to get that done. And we took the company. It was basically a new construction plumbing company. We phased out new construction. Actually, I was able to sell it to a group and they bought it. And then we took it from there and we added air conditioning in 97 and we did 100% service. We started flat rating right away. I was a big advocate of change. Didn't, you know, I'll go to a contractor 2000. I would listen, I would learn and I would go implement. And if it made sense, we kept it. If it didn't, we threw it out. And we just kept moving forward. And over the course of 15 years, we 100X'd the company. In 2010, I met a guy that was recently graduated from Stanford. And him and another buddy had a PE firm. And they had been buying all types of companies. And they thought that this would be a great space. But they saw that the margins were so low that they didn't think they could buy anything because it couldn't give them enough money. And when they met me, I showed them that it's actually easy to make a lot of money doing this. And we were actually back in 2010, making about 25 cents on the dollar. And we were doing this with just a simple software back in the day and spreadsheets and just procedure, you know, making everybody stay in line. This is why we do this. And created this atmosphere and this culture where the customers responded to us. And they told other people about us and we were able to grow the company. And so once they saw that you can make those kind of returns, they got very interested and we formed a little entity called Berkey's Holdings. My company was called Berkey's Plumbing, Heating and Air. And then we formed Berkey's Holdings. And from that, the wrench group was created. From that, I went on and created Sarah and Billigo, which we'll get into. One of my other partners created another PE firm that he's still out doing. And then Graham, the lead guy on this, he has Apex now, which is one of the largest PE firms. So the three of us have all gone on and done some really successful things. You know, just getting together is what got it all started. And it's pretty much the epicenter of what we're experiencing the last 10 years with the PE firms is all started right there. And be honest with you, we had an idea of what we were going to do. We'd buy companies. We didn't expect this to be an industry-wide phenomenon when we started. You know, we didn't have a playbook to go from. We were just trying to create something out of thin air, and that's what we did. And that's how I really got going in the business.
You know, it's quite a story. I'm not really sure if you're a plumber or if you're a software guy. You a little of both?
Well, I have a plumbing license, and my wife teases me and says that I'm a traveling software salesman. So something aspired to all of my goals.
So, Billy, I will say that's unique. You know, most people who turn wrenches aren't necessarily good with software coding and even, you know, business for the most part. I know a whole lot of great technicians that aren't great business owners or even good business owners. That's why they need to plug into systems. You want to talk a little bit about this software system, Sarah, a little bit?
Yes, sir. Well, Sarah was created because I wanted to share what we were able to do. And once we had the ability to build it, I was just obsessed with getting it done. And so Sarah was created almost 5 years ago. It's actually been on the market about a year and a half now and has been, you know, growing tremendously ever since we introduced it. And really what we're trying to do here is take away the redundancy and the complications and the chaos that happen inherently in our businesses. You know, the average service call has over 28 touches, somewhere in the neighborhood of 28 to 35 touches from four or five different people in the company. And that's just one service call. And that just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I know we dealt with it. And with software, I could automate the majority of those redundant touches out. And that was what the catalyst was. And the next thing that really got me excited about the software, what really was exciting, is the first thing we built was something for the customer, the person buying from you. No software has even thought about that part of it. And what we were trying to do was, how do we make it really simple and easy for a customer to do business with us? You know, we've got all these things that we've been taught in the world that we should be doing, but we haven't realized that these are friction points. And, you know, dispatch fees up front, that's a friction point. You know, you're going to probably waive it anyway. Why create the friction? And so Billigo is a company that I started at the same time that I started Sarah. And Billigo is a plumbing and HVAC company. And we test everything that we do. We A-B test every idea. And the idea was, we're not going to go to market with dispatch fees. We're just going to be no dispatch fee. And then we also created 1 hour appointments. In an industry that can't be on time in a 4 hour window, we were going to try and be on time in a 1 hour window. And through this innovation, our company and the companies on Sarah have seen tremendous growth. We are going to be wrapping up our fifth year at Billigo. And the goal here at Billigo is not to grow the biggest company in town, it's to grow the most profitable company in town. And you use Sarah to do that. And we'll probably make it probably at 31% EBITDA. Several companies on Sarah that are doing the same thing. We're basically printing money. We'll probably do 14, 15 million in revenue and bring home $4+ million.
This is going to change the industry. One wants to build up their service business to have that eventual exit. And we hear more and more about the value of service companies, which is huge today. PE companies are coming in and so forth. So you're going to be, through your software, be able to afford these business owners even a larger return.
That's the whole idea here. Because the thing is, I had a great big EBITDA number. My number was off the charts for the size of Berkey. It's off the charts for Billigo. And back when I was doing this, the multiples weren't as high as they are now. And so now you have a really high multiple, but you're shorting yourself because of the amount of EBITDA that's coming out of these companies. You know, a million, less than 2 million, less than 1 million, right in there. That's usually what they're buying. You can put a multiple that was, you know, double what I was getting, and I still got more. And that's what we're trying to do. How do we help you get more out of that company? And we do that through efficiency processes, job time efficiency. We know how to charge for every minute of everyone's time. That is the key to Sarah. I mean, mm-hmm. of all things, that is the key. And you don't have to charge a dispatch fee if you're charging for that minute, every minute that it takes them to travel there anyway. And if you know that number, it's easy to get the price right and do it. And the nice thing about it is, by being able to make the business efficient everywhere, in the office, in the marketing, in the processes of dealing with the service call, of selling equipment, make all that simpler. It requires less redundancy, less people, and you're able to keep more of the money. You can pay your employees more because you're not overstaffed. Not anyone in the company that I have has 5, 6, 7, 8 different jobs that they have to do. That's all we do. We just fill everybody up with more and more jobs because we need all this stuff done. Why don't we just get rid of what causes the complication? My main inspiration is I never expected to get the life that I've gotten out of this industry. I mean, I had no idea. I was just a kid, but you know, that was fortunate enough to take on a plumbing company, and I didn't kill it. I kept it going, and I actually grew it and made it into something. And then we started this PE thing. And then between the money I was making in my first company and then the money I got, you know, for selling a part of that company, it set me up really well. And I did a lot of things while I was making money to make sure that I set myself up. And so I retired from the PE firm and from Berkey's about a year and a half after I did the deal. And when you're in your 40s, it's probably not a good time to retire because you're still trying to do stuff. And so I did a lot of real estate. We did really well coming out of the big crash that we had in 08, 09, 10. So I was able to do that, but it wasn't fulfilling me. Buying a building, once you buy it, then that's all you do. It has tenants or whatever, and you're done. And so I wasn't using my mind, and I kept saying, I've got to get back in the industry, but I didn't want to come back and build another Berkey's. I've already been there and done that. That didn't really interest me, building another Berkey's. That was the goal. The goal was let me build this and share it. Let me just build it and help. I want to give back. This industry has given me so much. And that was really the catalyst of me wrecking our retirement.
So how is Sarah different than other products on the market? You're not the first to market with a similar product, are you?
Oh, no, we're probably last. Mm-hmm. If you want to be honest about it, we're probably way behind a lot of people. But the problem or the difference is the code. I mean, it comes down to just those four letters, it's the code. And we knew what we wanted on the very first line of code. And we knew what we wanted it to do on the very first line of code. And that is what separates us from everyone else. You know, I mentioned earlier, the customer has the ability to do business with us. They have their own customer portal and it's taken off and it's really growing these companies and their SEO rankings go up. All these things are happening. And so without that being a part of the software, it can't talk to the admin. And then it can't talk to the tech app if you don't have these three pieces to where they're doing their thing. And so when a customer calls in or books online, which we get a lot of bookings online because people don't really want to talk to you anymore. They want to book online. They want to push a button and get service. And this is why we're being so successful. And this is why it was built this way. And it keeps them on your website. All this, that portal lives on the contractor's website. And so it keeps the constant traffic and it's convenient for the customer. And so if a customer is in one part of town and they have a call and we identify the calls by priority, how important they are, the potential profit, whatever, the location, Sarah knows where the techs are. It can tell the customer, oh, okay, I've got a tech. It doesn't actually tell the customer. What it does is it looks at where all the techs are. It looks at their abilities, their capabilities, and what they can do and who's successful at this type of call. And then we rank the call. Is this a priority call or is this just a normal call? Maybe it's a 5-year-old system, not that important, versus a 12-year-old system. It will put the right person on the call. In most cases, it will put the same person on the call if they're a repeat customer. Because we found that if you send the same tech versus a better selling tech, there's a 17% higher average ticket. And these are the things we learned through A/B testing. People want someone that they're familiar with. And then they have trust and they start buying. And so Sarah can figure out when a guy can get there based off of where they're at, you know, the prior to the call. And so everything's instantly done. And so you don't have to put the customer on hold like you do now. If you have a phone call or if they book online, they're not really getting an appointment with any other software. They're just getting an email sent to the company. And then the company calls them back and says, okay, this is really when we think we can come, right? We actually can do it. We literally can do it, make all these decisions in milliseconds. So there's millions of calculations that happen and instantly, and we instantly can show the customer, we can come between 1 and 2, 2 and 3, 3 and 4, whatever it is. And they can select it. So we chose when we can come, but we present it in a way that the customer thinks they're picking. And that creates a positive vibe for the company and then a positive 5-star review. Then they tell people, and they do. They write paragraphs about it. You won't believe this, you know, and they tell their story about how easy it is.
Because
you just had a big one.
Yeah, because you want the customers to feel like they're in control and they're making the decision, like a calendar program that many of us may use in our business, where if we want someone to come onto the podcast, we might send them a link and we have these available times, but they get to choose their time. So the ball's in their court. Something else that kind of struck me as you were talking about this, Billy, is it seems like there's a little bit of an Uber software piece to this where it's smart technology, right? And the homeowner's kind of in control of when that technician's coming and so forth. And there's AI involved, obviously.
Well, yes, sir. You know, there's a lot of algorithms, if you will, to figure all this stuff out. That is not what I'm good at. I'll be honest with you. I don't know anything about it. I just try to tell these people what I want. So, yes, sir. All the things that matter to a contractor are processed. And then an outcome is given to the customer, and the outcome is given to them in a way that'll make them think that they are in charge. Because think about it, they're having a bad day. And I think we lose sight of that as contractors. We're so focused on next sale, revenue, get this done, do, and we just create all this chaos and we do all these things. And not one time do we go, I'm glad I'm not them. That's a bad situation. She's pregnant and, you know, it's 105 degrees outside and that's the only air conditioner they have. And nobody's even thinking about the customer. And so that's what we wanted to do at Sarah. We wanted to make them think about, all right, you're really providing a service. We say we give great service in this industry. Oh, that's why we're growing. We're the best service company. But at the end of the day, great service in our industry is you get a half day window and I don't know when we're coming. That's great service. I can easily out engineer that problem. That's easily beat.
Yeah, well, that was the standard. And so you're breaking down all these walls, which is great. So everyone's going to be beating down a path to get your proprietary software, which makes a lot of sense. So you weren't first to market. We established that. I take it there, you guys had a great advantage, though, by seeing what other companies had put forth, and you can learn a lot before you then create your own. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. Talking to contractors using the products that they had at that time and listening where their shortcomings were. The industry thinks that software needs to be hard and we just deal with it. And that's not the case. And we set out to change it. You know, we set out to change it, make it easier to use, make it have good information, good data. We're a data mining machine. It's incredible the data that we can create, because we knew we wanted data from day one. We wanted to help these contractors. We wanted to help them get the information they need. We've got so much data, we haven't even exposed it yet. And we're pretty excited about it. And some of this is coming out as we speak. So you'll be hearing more about it. But what we were trying to do is help these folks have good information, make it easier to run their businesses, let them understand, you know, what they should be charging for stuff. Teach them about efficiency. Efficiency wasn't even a word in this industry until we came on a year and a half ago. Wasn't even a word in anybody's mouth. And we started talking about efficiency and creating these streamlined businesses so that they can be more profitable. When Billy Go hit 10 million in revenue a couple of years ago, I was looking back at Berkey's when it was about at 10, because I still have copies of the financials and stuff. So I was looking back. I was just doing a, you know, a look back. And we had 17 people in the office taking calls, managing everything that goes in the office at 10 million market at Berkey's. And today, Billigo has 4. And we're, when we're way bigger than 10 million. When we started doing budgets for 2023, I asked everyone, I said, is this the year we need to bring number 5 in? And they're like, no, let's see how far we can go. And so we're going to try to see if we can get to 20 million at some point. And with the same 4 people in the office.
Yeah, there's a word for that. It's called leverage. Great job.
Oh my gosh, this, the efficiency, and let the software do the work and let them manage it, right? Let them make the decisions that matter, you know. So there's always those going on. And so that's why I wanted to build Billigo. Was I needed to prove it to myself. I was really grasping for straws here. I didn't have anything to go on other than I know this will work. Let's build it and see what happens.
Just a quick note here, guys. I want to ask you for a favor. My guests and I really want to bring you, the home service professional, the best quality podcast possible. I just have one simple request. Would you please subscribe to this podcast right now? In return for your favor, I promise to bring you the best of the best in the home service world. Guests like Billy Stevens, Tommy Mello, Ismael Valdez, Al Levy, and so many more. Thank you for listening, and I promise to bring you much more just like this.
This is Ellen Rohr. You're listening to Contractor Stories. Telling these authentic stories.
You better believe, you better believe. So Billigo is really, it's like a test tube baby. It's an experiment because you had to have it to plug in your software to prove to yourself and others that this works with a real company. You can't do it, you know, on a computer saying, well, here's a model, and this is probably what would have happened. Yeah. I guess you could have partnered up with some other home service providers, but you probably had a lot more control doing it yourself.
Yeah, I had 100% control. I couldn't mess this up. I had to really be in charge of it and think through it the way I was seeing things and the way I'd built businesses in the past. And I never built businesses for being the largest company in town. That was never my goal. My goal was to own my backyard, whatever size my backyard ended up being. And I think when we sold Berkey's, we were going maybe 16 miles from our office. That was it. And we're in the center of DFW. We didn't go over to Dallas. We didn't do any of that stuff. We didn't have to. And because we wanted to own where we were. So we saved fuel. We were seen more. I had the money to market. So I had 2 vans I went and bought, stuck some stickers on it, put Berkey's on there as big as I could. And then if I kept them in a certain area, they would start being seen over and over again because people move in the same patterns every day, right? Just about. And that's how we did it because we didn't have the budget. I couldn't get to the front of the yellow pages. I didn't have the money. And so I had to be creative in how I built a company. And so we started buying all the phone numbers of all the disconnected plumbing and HVAC companies at the back of the book instead of trying to be in the front of the book. And then just staying in one area, a compacted area. There was enough business right here where we were. We didn't have to go to Dallas. We didn't have to go to Fort Worth. We just stayed and we focused on it. We were able to build a very large business doing that.
Yeah.
And no, that's what I recommend to people. Don't spread yourself out. Let's make the best of everything.
I tell people all the time in business, I would think twice before going wide, go deep. Because when you go deep, like you said, they're going to see the vans over and over again. And you can own your backyard. Why are you trying to own the whole country when you aren't even done in Texas? And Texas can be too big. So just, you know, DFW, right? People want to conquer everything like the Romans. It's not practical for most companies. All right, Billy, we're going to go back in time because we want to learn more about you as a young man. Who was Billy at 12 years old? What type of kid were you?
Well, I think I was pretty good, but we may need to ask my mother. I think different, but I was a kid that liked adventure. I loved dirt bikes. I Everything about my life is about dirt bikes. When I was that age, still kind of is. I didn't go, at 12, obviously, I didn't go to any parties. But even in high school, I didn't go to many parties because I would rather be ready to go race or something on the weekend. And that was more important to me. And I wasn't a very good student, to be honest with you. I did graduate in the top 100 of my high school class. Fortunately, there was 81 of us. So
good for you. Congrats.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Sounds like my story.
Yeah. Yes, sir. I didn't fit in, the square pegs or the round pegs. I was that kid that was like questioning everything. I was already asking questions. And I remember going to some of my teachers and going, I'm wanting to invest. How do you invest? I've got a job and I've got a little extra money and how do I invest? And nobody could tell me. And no one knew the answer. I was either going to, back then it was a small town. You went into agriculture, you went to college to become a lawyer or something like that, or you were a mechanic, which is what I got. That was the one that I got put into because I could work with my hands. And so they put me in mechanical, I built a tractor or something one year, rebuilt an engine. That was part of my class. So I didn't fit into the educated, going to college person at all. And so there really wasn't a lot for me to make me excited about school. And so at the age of 12, we could play outside. So I was always outside, just something I try to get my kids to do. But I think I was just aware that there was a great big world out there and I wanted to learn more about it. I remember doing that at a very young age.
And it's pretty wise of you wanting to learn how to invest at such a young age and know that there's something bigger and better for you than the country life of a Texas boy, because you kind of grew up in the middle of nowhere, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not in the big city you're in now. Who was the most influential person in your life when you were young? Did you have a mentor or someone you looked up to?
I did. I would imagine my uncle was my mentor in a way. I don't think he realized that he was. He didn't speak a lot, but everything he said, I listened to it. He was actually in plumbing business. And I saw that he was successful. And that's what got me thinking about, there's got to be something more than, going to college or something. There's got to be something I can do. I need to find my spot. And I would just have simple conversations with him. And some of the stuff that he would say stuck with me after all these years. I remember one time we were riding around to a job, back and forth to a job. I was helping him do some stuff. Of course, I had the shovel and he was the boss. So I was asking, I was already asking questions like, well, how did you get successful? How did you get money? What did you do? And he goes, well, if I could tell you anything, I got a couple of things to tell you here. He goes, number one, find you a good banker and make him your friend and always tell him when you're in trouble before he figures out you're in trouble. I'm like, okay, that sounds great. And by the way, I still have the same banker friend that loaned me the money for Berkey's. He's still my really good friend and we talk every week. And so I did what he said. And then he said something that stuck as well. He goes, everybody gets three opportunities. And it's the person that's aware of them and can do something about them that gets the opportunity to take advantage of them. And he says, every single person gets this opportunity. Either they see it or they don't. And if you get these opportunities, you need to recognize them and take care of them and take advantage of them and do something with them. And believe it or not, those opportunities came up. Berkey's kind of fell in my lap and I was aware of it and didn't have the money to do anything about it, but I was able to put a deal together. So, and everything was great.
What do you think your biggest win has been over your lifetime?
That'd be my wife and kids, I guess. That would definitely be my biggest win. I mean, for business, maybe go back to my kids working with me now. So that to me is yes, he's pretty go-getter and he spends the majority of his days at Sarah and then he works at Billy Go in the evenings.
That seems to be the recurring answer. I ask that question of almost everybody who comes on the program. One day we're going to get some guy's going to forget all about his wife and kids, but they usually don't.
Yeah. I mean, my conversation with my wife was, I got this plumbing company I want to buy. She's like, you just got this job and you're making good money finally. And I said, well, I want to quit and I want to get this job business. I don't know how we're going to do it yet, but are you okay if I pursue this? She goes, yeah, I'll follow you in whatever you do. And I go, well, there's one more catch to this. You're going to have to quit your job too.
Wow.
And she's like, oh, okay, well, let's get it done.
Yeah, that's a great partner. That's a great partner. It's critical, not just in home service, just in anything in life. If your partner that you spend all your time with, that you're committed to in marriage, is not on board with what you're doing, then I hate to say it, you might need to find a new partner or not pursue your dream. And if your partner does not allow you to pursue your dream, which I'm not going to judge whether it's right or wrong, you may have a big problem and resent that person, and your marriage might have trouble. Because if you're really a driven entrepreneur and someone's holding you back, it's going to bust. You'll probably end up leaving them, I guess, if you're that driven. Billy, what's your biggest regret?
Probably taken 5 years to come back to the industry. I should have just stayed away for like maybe 2 years. I think I took a little bit longer to come back to it than I now. And I say that because I'm old now. And so,
so that's interesting. When did you get old? And I'm serious when I ask that question, because I ponder that myself, because we might be around the same age. So I'm just curious, when did you determine you were old? Because I tell people a lot, I'm old. And they're like, what do you mean? I said, well, when you get to be my age, you'll know what I'm talking about, because time is running out. So how old were you when you thought, hey, my time's running out?
I think when I turned and got into my 50s, is when I was saying, you know, I got to do something. I'm not done. And that's really, and it's not old in the fact that, hey, I'm old and I've got a crank cane or whatever. That's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. It's these business, I'm running two businesses. That doesn't count the other businesses I have. I'm running two startups. That's a whole nother level of work. And I'm up for it. I love work. That's what I do. But I'll tell you, I'm wiped out. One thing, I would never see the news if they didn't come out with the 9 o'clock news, because I can't make it to 10.
Yeah, well, that's because you're getting old, Billy. And old people go to bed early and they go to the early bird special at the restaurant. I'm just saying, okay? So Luby's early bird.
Yeah, 3:30.
So you're obviously a seasoned professional. You've been around the block. If you went back in time and you could talk to your 21-year-old self, what are some of the tips that you would give him?
Great question. I think the biggest thing that I learned not much longer after that, say 23 years old, I got a job working as a bartender, and I lied. I said I could make mixed drinks. I never made a mixed drink in my life. I got the job. I had to do what I had to do, right? And so I was young. What I learned then is what I always think about, is I was able to meet people where they were actually glad to see me, right? I didn't have to go out and introduce myself, small talk, do all that stuff. It allowed me to learn more about people. I think going back and telling myself at 21, 23 years old, what I would have done better, I would have done a better job of networking all those people and using those people to help me get, you know, further up. There was a lot of really cool people. It was at a restaurant. It wasn't like a nightclub or something. We were done at 9 o'clock. So back then, I thought that I just couldn't do it. Maybe I didn't have it. I still hadn't found my niche, if you will. And I think I would have made myself probably push harder to get to my niche, which I found, you know, not much longer after that, but I think I could have found it earlier. So I think that I just needed to be more competent at the end of the day. And so that's what I came from that. I grew from that job. To me, that was the best education, better than college, that year and a half that I did that. I just learned more about myself through other people. And then being confident enough to continue to pursue that would probably be what I would have told myself.
Yeah. Overall, everything from day one to today, what would you say the secret to your success is, if it could be one thing, like hard lazy. Work, networking?
I'm lazy.
You're lazy.
And that is the key to my success. And I want to tell you what I mean by that.
Okay.
And I stand by this 100%. I found one of the things that I did find out through that job, and I use it in my business, is there's people that are better at these things than you are. And through my own inability to learn or master everything, I developed the ability to hire people, talented people, and steer them in the right direction, because I didn't have the time to do it. And I always go back to saying I was just too lazy to do everything. And so the lesson here is, if you got a small contracting business, you need to get lazy, because you can't do it all. And you got to stop taking it home. And you gotta make that move to get that next level. You gotta go from being the owner that started the company, that's going out and still running calls, and you have a small business and you have people coming and going, you know, that work for you. No one's really staying. You're not able to build a company. And the reason why is because you're trying to do everything. And so get a little lazy and find someone that's good at it, at a certain job. Go hire them. Go get them in there to help you build the company. And that's really all I did, is I immediately go, I don't know how to do this. I'm going to go find somebody. Mm-hmm. And I would go without, back in the day, I'd go without pay to pay someone else, because they could do it better. With my guidance, I would, you know, push them to do better. And to me, I'm no lazy is not really what I am, but being lazy in the fact that I can't do everything is really what I'm trying to say here. And I think that has been my greatest asset and to my success, is because I recognize that if I'm going to build these companies are bigger than me. I'm just driving it. That's it. I'm just driving the bus. I always own companies. Even when I was working at the restaurant, I always owned something. I always knew I couldn't work for someone else. And I got that lesson at a very early age. I went to work for a gas station. This is back when you would clean the windows and check the oil and put the gas in for them. They didn't even get out of the car. I'm aging myself now. And I was just a perfectionist kind of guy. And this gas station was like a garage, like you would think it was back in the day. Grease everywhere. It's filthy. It's unorganized. And I went in there and I cleaned that thing I think I worked there 4 or 5 months. And I completely cleaned it and refurbished that entire thing in between filling cars up and cleaning their windshields. That's what I did. I didn't sit in a chair and wait for the next car. I would go back there and I'd start organizing the tools and cleaning them up, getting all the grease off the floor, off the walls, organizing it, putting stuff in a pile that asked the owner, do you want to keep this or throw it away? And so I really made that thing to where you could eat off of it. You could eat off the floor back there. And it had a half inch thick grease when I started. And I got fired about 5 months later. They accused me of stealing gas. And I'm like, steal your gas? But for whatever reason, their gas was off by like 8 gallons or something. And they wouldn't let it go. And I'm like, I didn't take the gas. And so I got fired. And then right then and there, I knew it's the last job I'm ever going to really take, you know, and work for someone else. I'm going to take jobs to get me to where I need to be. But that's it. I'm not designed, you know, I should not have, no matter what, in my mind, I should not have been fired. I should have been, realized I was promoted. Yeah.
Yeah. You should have been promoted.
You should have put me in the second gas station, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, they say that some people aren't cut out for college. Some of us aren't cut out for employment by someone else as a W-2 worker. It's best that we employ people. And I worked in the corporate world until I was 36 and I laid myself off. I got out. I just quit cold turkey and started my entrepreneurial life because I was a misfit and I didn't fit in. It just wasn't for me. So I totally understand. However, it took me a lot longer to figure that out. Billy, as we wrap this up, one final question. And I always end with this question. If you could recommend one book to other small business owners, entrepreneurs, people in home service, what would that be?
You know, it's Rich Man, Poor Dad.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you just can't get any. It's easy to read. It's easy to understand. And it pretty much sums it all up. I mean, it's I love that book. I still read it. And in fact, every employee of Billy Go has that book. We that's part of when you come here, you're going to read about it. And then we walk through that book in our company meetings once a month that I give. And because we're here to help them improve their lives, right? And teach them about finances so they can buy homes and send their kids to college if that's what they want to do, right? And not just have a job. And so that is the number one book, and it gets distributed throughout the company.
Interesting choice. It's interesting also that Robert Kiyosaki, who wrote that book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, amongst other Rich Dad, Poor Dad books, he's one of the people, amongst others, such as Zig Ziglar and so forth, who told me to quit my job when I was 36. Now, they didn't tell me to do that personally. I didn't know them, but the tapes I had in my car and the CDs, I'd listen to this stuff. I'm like, this stuff seems to make sense, but no one else talks about this. These guys are either crazy or where everyone else is. And I went with the Kiyosakis and with the Zig Ziglars and found a whole new world. So I agree with you. I love Kiyosaki.
Yeah, it's been a great book. And it's easy to teach to your people that, you know, that you work with every day. It's easy to get it across what we're trying to talk. I had a meeting. This is back in the Berkey days, excuse me. And the question was, and if we got $1,000 in on a service call, how much money did the company make? And this is what changed my life when it came to doing meetings. They stopped doing meetings about plumbing and air conditioning, and it all started becoming about, you know, personal finance, stuff like that, personal improvement, all this stuff. And the number one answer was $1,000. When we had them write it on a piece of paper and bring it in, it was number one. They didn't even know. They just thought we made $1,000. They didn't realize that we were paying them out of $1,000. They didn't realize we were buying the gas and paying for the trucks. And then when we told them the answer, they thought we were lying. So, you know.
Yeah.
That's why I just
don't know. Yeah. Billy Stevens, thank you so much for joining us today here on Contractor Stories. But I, of course, appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. This has been great. Thank you.
Just a quick note here, guys. I want to ask you for a favor. My guests and I really want to bring you, the home service professional, the best quality podcast possible. I just have one simple request. Would you please subscribe to this podcast right now? In return for your favor, I promise to bring you the best of the best in the home service world. Guests like Billy Stevens, Tommy Mello, Ismael Valdez, Al Levy, and so many more. Thank you for listening, and I promise to bring you much more just like this. Telling these authentic stories, you better believe, you better believe.